Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Dumps it out to Towns. He's now defended by Giannis. Giannis trying to keep him from posting up inside. He takes it right out of it. Giannis having no part of it. He blocks the shot out of bounds. It was mano a mano. And in that instance, Giannis gets the better of him.
Bucks Talk starts now. Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide.
Well, where to begin with this one? 22-point loss, a wire-to-wire loss. You knew it was going to be tough, given it's night two of a back-to-back. Like, I'm not trying to make excuses. It was extremely disappointing and not the result you were expecting to see. Knew it was going to be tough. You're losing an hour flying to New York. It's night two of a back-to-back. It's a Knicks team that has also underperformed to start the season. I mean, I suppose, hey, it's not the third quarter that's a problem for the Bucks tonight. It was the second quarter. But the reality is this. Brandon, we talked last night, the identity change. Nobody is going to argue this is a defensive team. So you need to outscore your opponent. And the Bucks have just been in a brutal shooting slump to start the season. That is not the reason they are 2-7, but it doesn't help. The absence of Chris Middleton, Bobby Portis shooting, I would have to look it up again, but it was below 30% on threes. Gary Trent Jr. getting off to a rough start. You didn't even have him tonight. Like, it's another one of those games where I didn't think Giannis and Dame were great, but Giannis and Dame were, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're only two players scoring in double figures, and they just didn't have help. So the reality of the situation is the Bucks need to outscore teams, and they haven't been able to do it. You know, missing open looks that they usually make, not having the firepower they're accustomed to having, still waiting on Chris Middleton to make his return. The defense has not been good enough. I think Doc Rivers would be the first one to tell you that. And I think the toughest part of all of this is look at tonight in a vacuum. You should have won this game. That game was there for the taking. The Knicks shot 46%? The Knicks were not hot on threes. Jalen Brunson didn't hit any threes. If I gave you Jalen Brunson's stat line before the game, you would assume the Bucks won. It was right there for the taking, and we've seen a number of games like that so far this season.
Yeah, I was completely wrong last night, Justin, going back to what I was talking about last night on the show as we were getting ready. The Bucks giving me some confidence going into tonight, and I think we should preface it with, I don't know if the reports are true, but they didn't get in until 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if that's something you heard. They didn't get into
New York. I mean, yeah, but so what, you know?
I get it, right. But it just looked like a team that had no interest. They fought back in the first quarter, but, man, that first quarter was bad. And I was listening to Dave on the broadcast. I mean, it was second chance points after second chance points. 10 points, I believe he said, off of four offensive rebounds. They had 11 extra possessions in that opening quarter. They only down 7, so that gave me at least confidence going into that second quarter. But that's when the wall broke open, and just a very frustrating game, because it felt like we saw so many good things in that Utah game last night where it gave you hope. And I know maybe it was false hope in that moment. Maybe it was just something as a Bucks fan we were just searching for, because we were looking for almost about anything. But it just felt right last night. It looked like a team that Doc Rivers showed him a couple plays at halftime of that Jazz game, and they just completely turned the switch on. And they looked awesome in that second half last night. And it gave you some, at least for me, I'm speaking for myself, gave me confidence going into tonight, Justin. Like, this is a good test. It's a back-to-back. It's a second leg of a back-to-back. But they've played well in those second legs of back-to-backs this year. And then I'm watching the game, and I'm going to be honest with you, man. I get mad because this is – I don't want to make this sound like I'm being a baby, but this is an unfair schedule to begin the year. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal for a team still trying to figure out their identity. It's brutal for a team have one of their – I know.
You know what? Fine. Like, I don't disagree, but then beat the Bulls, beat the banged up Grizzlies, beat the Nets. Well, like and it's that's out the window.
That's a great point. You're absolutely right. Those are and that's what makes it even more frustrating. But you're absolutely right. It's hard to argue against that. And then you pull up the team stats for tonight, and you're not even lying, dude. 30% from three. I mean, for the Knicks, I mean, that's been their bread and butter. Well, at least that's what they wanted it to be. And Jalen Brunson, 15 points. None of the Bucks starters finished in the positive, in the plus or minus tonight. It was abysmal. I mean, all night.
I mean, I don't.
It was frustrating.
I'm not a plus minus guy. I mean, I think it can be deceiving at a lot of times because it has to do with who you're on the floor with. But I mean, those numbers would match the eye test. You know, like I think the big thing from tonight, and this is not just tonight. This isn't a vacuum type of thing for the Bucks. This is but we really have to consider some things here. I thought at halftime it was screaming to you got to play small. You know, like Carl Anthony Towns was just having his way. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Giannis was. This was not Giannis's best defensive performance tonight. But what the Knicks were doing, you had to play small. And, you know, we still haven't seen those lineups, at least heavy doses, of Giannis at the five, Torian Prince at the four, and then any combination, what, Dame, AJ Green, Andre Jackson Jr., something along those lines. We've still yet to see that. And, you know, like, I get the whole wear and tear argument on Giannis. I know I've made it in the past, but I mean, Karl Anthony Towns is the guy to do it against. Like, that's one of those matchups that makes sense. Maybe it's night two of a back-to-back, and some of that goes into the decision-making. But, like, I think Brooke Lopez is going to continue to get unfairly blamed for a lot of this. The issue is you have three bigs right now, and there isn't a great combination of two of the three at the moment. I mean, Giannis and Brooke have been good. We shared the numbers last night, but it's not to the levels that we've seen in years past. It's just like, it's been good. It hasn't been great. Brooke and Bobby has not been good. Giannis and Bobby has been abysmal, and that is a major issue for this team, and that's all you have for your bigs. I mean, after our conversation last night, I'm assuming you're going to be the first to say, well, play Tyler Smith. And
I mean.
Well, you know what, Brandon? At this point, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, what do you got to lose, though, Justin? I mean, I completely agree with you. I really do. And I've been hard on Brooke since you and I have started the year. And I think offensively he's been looking to create more. He's been looking to set up that two-man game with Damian Lillard a lot more. I think his shot decision has been a lot better these last few games. But
I frankly don't think it's changed at all this year.
Oh,
I
mean, absolutely.
You are
very
much nitpicking.
No. How am I nitpicking? I'm giving him credit. How am I nitpicking if I'm crediting the guy for doing something?
His shot diet has been almost identical all year long.
The first few games were a little bit. Okay, we're arguing something we already know. Everybody knows I'm right on this. But him and Bobby on the floor together was frustrating tonight, and I tweeted it out because I know Brooke's not the rebounder. I know he helps create those chances for opportunities, but Bobby is supposed to be that guy.
Well, Bobby had a really bad night rebounding.
Yeah, and it was awful. And at some point, and it didn't help that Andre Jackson Jr. leaves the game with the hit pointer. Going into half. So that kind of probably thwarted any small lineup they wanted to run.
Yeah. It's the tough part right now. What you're going through with this team is, I mean, best case scenario, 3-7 to start the season. The Cavs and Celtics remain very, very good. I mean, who knows when and or if the Cavs are ever going to lose. But, I mean, I've always talked, and not just me, every coach, most coaches will tell you 10 games is like the bite-size sample size you want to look at to view things. I know Billy Donovan of the Bulls looks at his season in 8-10 game chunks to see where do we progress or regress from 10 games to 10 games and what stands out the most there. If you're looking at overarching, what do I take from this team? You really want like 20 games or so. But, I mean, you can also find some things out about your team in less than that if it's standing out. And we are dangerously teetering on that. I mean, look, it's tough to make any full proclamations on this because of the rest component, and it was night two of a back-to-back, but there were so many plays tonight that they beat you on that, you know, the Knicks were the first guys on the floor after loose balls. They were getting to all of those. There was one play where it almost looked like a frustration, a loose ball, and Giannis just kicked it rather than diving.
That was in that third quarter. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those are the telltale signs of frustration or fatigue or whatever. But again, just how physical, and this shouldn't have been a surprise. It's a Tom Thibodeau team. Mm-hmm. But how physical the Knicks were, you know, we haven't seen the Bucks match that intensity all year long. And I know Doc Rivers has said repeatedly, like, if this is the Olympics, we're not going to win any medals in track. Like, we have to win in shot put and Greco-Roman wrestling. It's not how the team has played throughout the course of the season. And again, part of that goes back to your identity and how much that changed at the trade, with the trade last year. But when you're going up against that, and that team is more physical than you, all right, if you're not going to match the physicality, you have to do something differently. And to me, that just screamed going small. So I do wonder, I mean, we've already seen Andre Jackson inserted in the starting lineup. And I mean, this is just the luck of the Bucks, I suppose, that he gets the hip pointer two games, a game and a half into his stint in the starting lineup. Gary Trent Jr. dealing with back spasms, still without Chris Middleton. That all of it is now starting to mount for this team. But it just seemed like, okay, if you're not going to be the physical team, you got to be the smaller, quicker team. And the fact that, you know, we're already seeing Ajax in the starting lineup, that we're already seeing Ryan Rollins playing some minutes for this team. And frankly, I think he's been
solid.
Good. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to complain about with what you've seen. The larger question, and we unfortunately didn't get Doc Rivers postgame due to some connection issues in New York. So I don't know if this was brought up, but I think the larger question, we kind of touched on it last night, is what's the deal with DeLon Wright?
That it's another good question.
All of a sudden, he's not playing these last two games. I am... this is not what I expected. I don't think this is what most of us expected. So it's still difficult to come to grips with what we're seeing here, because you can only say it's early for so long, you know, and it's teetering on no longer early. I mean, the Eastern Conference is doing you a massive favor with nobody else other than the Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers piecing this together. The Knicks are the only other team that is 500 or better. You know, like the Hornets are in the mix. Hornets, Pacers, and Nets are all 4-5. Pistons, Magic, and Hawks are all 4-6. We are nearly 10 games into the season, 3 weeks in. The Charlotte Hornets, the Brooklyn Nets, the Detroit Pistons, the Wizards, the Raptors, they all have as many or more wins than do the Bucks. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on this somber edition of Bucks Talk, where this team falls to 2-7. So your best case scenario, 3-7 through your first 10 games. You know, like we joked before the season, it's a tough schedule. I mean, what would be a disaster through those first 10? Like 4-6, 3-7? Well, best case scenario is going to be 3-7. And that is going to be a tall mountain to climb with the Boston Celtics. You are staring right in the face at a 2-8 start. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I see Dick on the line. We'll get to him and the rest of you coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk. Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
Two and seven start to the year for the Bucks, who get manhandled by the Knicks. And The disturbing trend is these types of outcomes, not just the losses, but the optics of the losses. Another game where we see the Bucks having to empty the bench, and tonight it was very early, final 8 minutes of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Would have been a great night for A.J. Johnson, though.
It is starting to get it to be a pretty deep hole to dig out of here. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with Dick in Port Washington. Have at it, Dick.
Well, let me vent a little bit. You know, it was a fool's gold win last night. And, you know, I there's one thing that I kind of convinced myself that made some sense is that Connaughton the other day said, look, we've lost five games in a row during the championship season, but, you know, you're into it. And, you know, if you're 20 and 12 and you lose five, you're 20 at 17. And it looks bad. And I was buying into that until tonight. We are what we are. We're old, slow, and not compatible together. Anybody that thinks that bringing Chris Middleton back is going to solve much, it's not.
Well,
he's old and injured.
What it solves.
Now, let me finish.
All right,
I just got some other items. Okay?
Right.
Let me just vomit this all out.
Go for it.
Brooke is done. I mean, he couldn't take Towns tonight. Giannis couldn't handle him. But you know what? You read online, oh, we should trade Bobby. We should trade Brooke. That's great. I'd trade those guys in a minute. The trouble is we can't. We're in an apron team. You can't
I mean,
trade guys.
You can.
We're stuck with this group. Well, yeah, but you got to hire five lawyers to figure out how you're going to do it. Because
I mean, it's relatively easy. It's just a matter of like
matching.
Well, and it's just look if
what.
Well, and it's
you can't trade more than one guy at a time.
I know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so that's technically not true. You can aggregate contracts so long as that trade takes you under the second apron.
Okay. So anybody, I don't mean to laugh, but to me it's funny. So you got to get someone that's salary will take you underneath the apron, right? That's what you said?
Yeah, so basically.
Why would we want a guy like that? Why would we want a guy like that? You're not going to improve yourself then.
Well, I mean, that's not.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. It's not true. I mean, there are players that are effective that make less than those guys. But the issue is, okay,
if we're seeing these
warts and these flaws, why wouldn't the other team? And what's their incentive when you don't have any sweeteners? Because that's the issue. It's not so much the second apron. It's the fact that the Bucks don't control their next six first-round draft picks or their next six second-round draft picks. So there's nothing to attach to any of these guys.
Right. But my point is still valid. Anybody that would take us below the apron that's playing well, why would they trade them to us? You know, this is what we've got for this year. Our best hope is to somehow get into the play-in tournament and figure this out. And my final point is this. And it might seem surprising to you guys. Okay. Giannis and Dame has been our team this year, right? Without those guys, I don't think we'd win a game. But here's the problem that I have with them. They're not making anybody else any better on the team. They're not setting them up for success. I mean, I see guys working their butt off to get free and open. And, you know, A.J. Green tonight a couple times stood in the corner. All open, you know. You see Giannis or Dame dribble it to the middle, not looking to the outside. We're not. They're not trying to make anybody better.
I disagree with that, Dick. And thanks for the call, Dick. But here, I mean, it's tough to trust those guys in the corner when we're seeing Bobby shooting 26% on threes, Brooke 26%. Gary Trent Jr., 23%. Pat Connaughton, 25%. Like, at some point, I get it that, nah, I'm Giannis. I know how to finish in the paint. I'm just going to take this myself. Like, that, I think, is a big part of it. Torian Prince and A.J. Green have been pretty good on those shots. And you've seen Giannis look for teammates. The last two games, his assists have not been there. You have to make shots to get an assist. So I think that's a big part of it. I mean, I'm not going to say they're not making their teammates better, because nobody's hitting shots on this team. And that's not a product of Giannis and Dame not setting them up. The guys are not hitting shots. Those two guys are the only guys that have produced anything offensively.
Let me ask you this question, Justin, and I mean this sincerely. Is their identity? What is their identity?
They don't have one.
That's the problem, and I think that's where Dick is getting to with Giannis and Dame. It's a lot of ISO. It's a lot of two-man game. It's half the time.
I mean, two-man game isn't a bad thing.
Right. When you're committed to it. I mean, I don't know.
They've been committed to it on just about every possession.
If those screens are committed that Giannis is setting, then I would venture off to think that you're not necessarily fully committed to that game. Because when he sets screens with intention, it's a completely different outcome most of the time. And I understand what you're saying. They are. But you're two-man game, and then you're lumping in guys that are just absolutely atrocious from behind the arc. I think that's – and what's frustrating is when Doc took this job, correct me if I'm wrong, when he took this job over for Adrian Griffin, he said that the issue with this team is you don't have an identity.
Yeah,
that was like one of his initial statements, and now you and I are having this conversation in the second – is it the second week of November? Yeah.
Well, he said it again this year, too. And, you know, I mean, that's going to be the thing that – everybody's going to have to come to grips with is it's been three different coaches that we've seen similar results to. So, like, at some point, if you don't see a turnaround or a change, like, I get one of everyone's favorite pastimes is blaming Doc Rivers, but at some point,
players got to play.
How much of it is on the coaches if we're seeing this for, you know, three straight seasons with three different head coaches?
Well, and that's the thing. You're getting underperformances from the guys that you just named, Gary Trent, Brooke, and Bobby as on the offensive side of the ball. There's a reason that apparently the Bucks are out trying to shop some players. I'd be curious to see what those phone conversations are like, and obviously we won't know until if and when it happens, but frustrating. I mean, it's very frustrating because you and I had multiple conversations on these airwaves as well as personal that this just looks like a better team. I mean, you're surrounding Giannis and Dame with better shooters, and it just felt – I think that's the biggest problem, man. I really do. I feel like this offseason for the Bucks was encouraging. Thought it was exciting. I thought, you know, it was kind of under the radar. A lot of people not picking the Bucks, barely making the play-in tournament or just missing the play-in tournament. And I know for me, again, speaking for myself personally, I scoffed at it. I'm like, ain't no way. You've got two of the top 75 players of all time on your team. If everybody else was hurt, I still wouldn't have imagined that we started with a possibly looking like a 2-8 record in the first 10. That's been, I think, the most frustrating thing. And it's not that the Bucks made that trade for Damian Lillard. I don't know if anybody heard Jrue Holiday this week saying that he himself would probably make that trade. So John Horst, in my opinion, and I usually like to back my team's general managers because I'm a homer, but I feel like he did the right thing in many different ways.
Yeah, I don't want to relitigate that trade. We've done it. We're not going to keep plowing over the same piece of grass
here. I'm talking about Gary Trent Jr., Taurean Prince. I'm talking about the moves that he made this year. I thought were encouraging to start this year, and it looked more exciting.
Taurean Prince has been, I think, pretty good for the Bucks. Gary Trent Jr. has gotten off to a very slow start, and it's unfortunate that it's coming at a time when the Bucks really need offense. So, how much of the identity can change? I mean, you know, I know what you referred to with Brian Windhorst, and I know he said, look, I don't know what help is on the way with this team.
Yeah.
So finding minutes for the young guys, like you liked what you saw from Andre Jackson Jr., and it was very perplexing when he wasn't on the floor to start the second half, and then you learned, oh, great, a hip pointer and somebody else that's dealing with something. But the unfortunate part of it is, you know, the Bucks, that you don't have another big that you can say, all right, we got to have a quick hook with Bobby because he just doesn't have it tonight. And I know I heard one thing that Doc said about Bobby basically along the lines of, I don't know what it is. He hasn't been himself. He hasn't found that shot yet. And he's been very consistent since I arrived in the last few years. But for whatever reason, it's not there this year. So,
well, and he's dealing with something off the court, too, which, you know,
yeah,
you can chalk.
Yeah, right.
You know, it is what it is. It's
been before that, though.
Yeah.
And I don't know what other options you have is the unfortunate part. You know, I'm not calling for Bobby Portis to be traded or cut or pulled from the lineup. But I don't know what other options you have until Chris Middleton returns, because I still believe Chris Middleton's role on this team is going to be probably used in small ball lineups, that he's either your four or he's playing next to Taurean Prince as your four, and that gives you the option to do some other things that you would ordinarily do where Bobby Portis is in the lineup next to Giannis. Like, case in point tonight when we said you got to play younger or you got to play smaller and just be the team that does that. Put Giannis on Towns. Doc said, I didn't want to start the game with that. But as we kind of learned, I probably should have, and we kind of had to go to that. But it's, you know, you don't have the cards, at least not right now, and who knows if that's going to change. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Some more calls to get to. A frustrating night, and not the start, certainly, that we hope for, but honestly expected for this team. 2-7 to open up the season. More after this on Bucks Talk.
The Round Ball Repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
.116-94. Final score, 22-point loss in New York to the Knicks. It was night two of a back-to-back. They did arrive, they being the Bucks, early this a.m., 2 or 3 in the morning. But it's been a disturbing trend through these first 9 games. 855-616-1620, the number to join us on Bucks Talk tonight. Let's head to the phones and check in with Logan on the east side. You're up next.
Hey, Justin. Long time listener, man. I always appreciate how you make me feel less crazy after nights like tonight.
I don't know about tonight.
Quick question. So I know you guys touched on it a little bit. There's obviously been a lot of talk about trades and how the Bucks are apparently reaching out to like almost every other team in the league and potentially not really getting anywhere. But if they were to do something, what do you think a package that we would send out would look like? And would it potentially include, I know it's a long shot, but do you think they would consider including Chris Middleton in that?
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't know. So, like, in terms of what package, I mean,
and we don't know what's true and what's, I mean, it's quote unquote report.
Yeah, I mean there's been reputable reports out there, but
they've been trying to get Giannis out of our city since 2018.
Well,
so
I'm not even referring to that. Just Brian Windhorst.
I'm speaking in general.
Yeah. I mean, look, any type of move, you have to set low expectations because of the parameters the Bucks are dealing with the second apron. I mean, the only easy trades that the Bucks have to make are the doomsday scenario. You know, like if this doesn't work out this year and it just becomes clear, hey, we tried and it has, you know, I don't want to get to the point of like we're being reflective here and we're looking back at something that ended, because we're not there yet. But that's really the only easy scenario they have, you know, because as I think the big thing is this, as we just kind of touched on with Dick, you don't have any sweeteners. That's the tough part about being in the second apron. So, I mean, just second apron 101 for dummies. You cannot aggregate contracts. So, in other words, you have a player that's making $9 million. You want to trade for a guy that's making 12. You can't take player A making $9 million, package him with player B on your roster making $3 million, and trade him for that $12 million player. It has to be a like for like. You cannot take back. So the usual rule with trades is you can take back 120% of what you send out. You can't do that. You cannot take back $1 more than you are sending out in a trade when you're in the second apron. So if player X makes $8.97 million, you cannot trade him for a player that makes $8.98 million. It has to be the exact same amount or less that you're sending out. You can't sign anybody that's been bought out if they are making the mid-level exception or more. I don't think that would have applied to Danilo Gallinari a season ago, but you know, you think back to in years past, some of the players that the Bucks have brought in, like way back when, Pau Gasol wouldn't be able to do that. Marvin Williams wouldn't have been able to do that. PJ Tucker is everybody's kind of clamoring for, or was at one point. What if the Clippers buy him out? First of all, they're not going to buy him out. There's multiple years left on the contract.
What year with PJ Tucker? Is that every other year?
But, you know, you couldn't even sign him because the amount he's making is more than the mid-level exception. So it just drastically handcuffs what you can do. You can basically trade an exact amount of money for the exact amount of money, right? In a one-for-one trade. Now, the ways around that are, okay, if we have this player that we have deemed is not very good, and, I mean, these are smart guys in the league, in front offices, so let's just say this player that every Bucks fan is calling out is, this guy stinks, let's get rid of him. Okay, you think the other teams don't know that? You know, like, what is the sell on me taking that player? Yeah. A couple of things. Am I giving up a player that has more years left on his contract, and this is an expiring contract, and we can gain some cap relief there? I'll consider it, but I still need some sweetener. Now, the Bucks don't really have any of those, because all the names that get mentioned the most, and I'm not advocating for any of these players to be traded or saying they're going to be, but you know, Pat Connaughton, it's a player option. Chris Middleton, it's a player option. So it's not technically an expiring contract, and if that player gets traded to a less than desirable spot, yeah, I'm going to pick up my option. Or if that player is as bad as we've been led to believe, yeah, I'm going to pick up my option if there's not any money that's going to be out there or as much on the open market for me. So that's the difficulty of the spot the Bucks are in. And as I was saying, one way around that is, okay, we recognize we're getting the better player than we're giving up, but there's other incentives and motivations of, we want to clear up some more money. We're a younger team that's trying to clear some room for a young player. We want to see what we've gotten him. We'll take on this problem. I mean, think back to all through the years, teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder, where it's been like, we'll be the sin eaters here. We'll take on your terrible contracts, but it's going to cost you. We'll take this, you know, Al Horford trade. We need a couple of first-round picks, or yeah, we need a couple of second-round picks and things of that nature. You don't even have that to work with. Like, and that's, maybe, I didn't think we would get here this quickly, but maybe the most alarming thing about this season is, you know, if you could say, well, if there's one positive, if this season goes south, the Bucks are planting their flag for Cooper in the first round. Well, not so fast. You don't even own your first round pick. So you don't have a first round pick to trade for the next 6 years, because of the pick swaps that you have coming up with the Pelicans and with the Blazers further down the road. And keep in mind, you can't trade away a pick in consecutive years, so that's tied to some of those pick swaps that you can't move it until 2031 is the next pick that the Bucks can trade. And if you finish in the second apron again next year, 2031 gets frozen, cannot be traded, and gets moved to the end of the first round. So even if you finish with the worst record in the league, but you're a repeater in the second apron, tough. You're picking last, or you're picking towards the end, depending on how many other teams had their pick frozen. So it's a very tough spot, meaning the answer is going to have to come within from this team, yeah, whether that is expediting the growth of young players, players just playing to the level we've grown accustomed to, guys hitting shots, whatever it is. There is no outside savior in all likelihood. Like, it has to come within. I think we all heard and knew that was going to be the case of, oh, I heard about the second apron. Things are going to be tough. They're not going to be able to do X, Y, or Z. But now that you're faced with it, like, I think we all kind of kicked the can down the road of, like, well, why would the Bucks need to do that? You have Giannis, you have Dame. We got continuity. You got a better coaching staff and everything that we really drilled in during the offseason. You brought in Gary Trent and Torian Prince and all these upgrades. Why would they need to worry about it? And now we're here. So that's the tough part about these first nine games.
But I'll be honest with you, Justin, and maybe this is a hot take, and I know I've been super critical of a few players. I don't think that making a trade is the right call right now. I don't. You're underperforming as a team. And I know that's cliche, and I know that is, you know, doesn't matter when you're 2-7, but I think it's real simple. I think Bobby Portis has to play better. I don't know if you're trading him you're gonna net somebody of equal to him. Obviously, like you mentioned, you're gonna have to contract wise. But I just think it's a matter of fact of guys are just underperforming. I mean, look at Gary Trent Jr. I mean, Gary Trent Jr. is a perfect example. That the guy used to torch the Bucks.
Frankly, and I know he's taken a lot of criticism. Bobby Portis is a perfect example, too. I mean, he's shooting 26% on threes right now. He's not even averaging one made three per game.
Right.
45% from the floor, not bad, but Bobby Portis is another example of that, of guys that are just not performing. And overall, I agree with you that it's not, you know, like this isn't for a multitude of reasons. Even if you said it's this, it's that, it's this, like this isn't the Lakers a couple of years ago. This isn't the Cavs way back when, where what year was that, Max? Where LeBron? I mean, I'm sorry, the Cavs front office just blew up the roster and reshaped everything on the fly.
That was 2018, so that was the year after Kyrie got requested the trade. So they had a bunch of old guys, D-Wade, Derrick Rose, Jay Crowder.
Rodney Hood.
Yeah, so that, no, they flipped them for Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson and all these young guys to try to bring in some more energy. Didn't work out, but.
And it's not even possible with the spot that the Bucks are in with this second apron. 855-616-1620. Number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head back to the phone lines and talk with Q in Milwaukee. You're up next.
Justin, this was not a fun game. the good news is it was a scheduled loss. Like we have 15 back-to-backs, but this 16. Is the one where we had to – 16, sorry, thank you. This is the one where we had to play a game in Milwaukee and then fly after that game to New York. Like that, this was a scheduled loss.
I don't disagree.
I
don't disagree with you, Q. That's a tough pill to swallow with the previous eight games. And it's easier to take if you don't lose to the Bulls, if you don't lose to the Nets, if you don't lose to the corpse of the Memphis Grizzlies again.
Yeah, but it should have been, it should have been the other way around, though. I mean, that's an Eastern Conference opponent, though. That's why I got angry, and I agree with Q. Great point. I was frustrated watching that game because, you know, this is going to come down to seeding and record, and we're on a second leg of a back-to-back after playing Utah at home, and then we go out to New York. The league has done zero favors for the Bucks to start the year. Zero favors.
So I do have some good news, though.
Okay.
8 of the next 10 games are at home.
But you got to win.
Sunday is the Celtics, but after that, there's only two other playoff teams this month on the schedule from last year.
I agree with you.
So I agree
with you, but again, you got to win those games because I'm going to point to the Bulls game, the Grizzlies game, the Nets game. So I would much rather have those teams and home games than being on the road for, two of the first 7-8 games. But we've seen the Bucks stub their toe with some of those other ones. So it is a results-driven league, and it's better, sure, but you got to win those games, and you got to start doing it ASAP.
I agree, and I've got some futures bets on the Bucks, and I'm gonna wait until after the Celtics game to go double down on them.
What is your track record previously with your futures bets? Just so we know.
I've done pretty well, but I'm just saying, like I'm expecting Sunday could be the worst our win loss record gets of this year, and then after that it's gonna start picking up. Like you said, the first 10 games, the schedule makers did us no favors, but I think the rest of this month things will start to even out. And I know there's a lot of sadness on Twitter and elsewhere with this team, but I'm still optimistic. And how about Tyler Smith scoring 10 points tonight at Madison Square Gardens?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks,
no
Justin.
Problem. Thanks for the
call.
He
looked good tonight. He looked good tonight.
I mean, where do you... Let's see. Here. If we're looking for the optimistic view of things, two pieces I can throw your way. Before we do that, let's take one more call. Will I Am, you're up next. Are you driving back from New York tonight?
Oh, no. Justin, Brandon, thanks for taking my call. Just driving the back roads here after hearing the game on the radio. And, you know, on away games, when I'm not at the game, I like to actually listen to the visiting team's commentary with Clyde, in this case, Mike Breen. And they had nothing but positive things to say, especially when they ballooned that lead out on us. And, you know, it's really interesting when we have the youth that we do and the intensity in these games. And it doesn't seem like these teams are bad with their records, but it just seems like we run out of gas. And I'm kind of upset when we don't get on the players for not having the effort. And, you know, there's classic series where, you know, these players have been benched. Chris got benched. Bobby got benched. We need to start putting action into the mix of the things, because you'll see us stay in there with the 1-2 punch of Dame and Giannis, but when you got people shooting 26%, 14%, and then you look at how many shots they need to put up to get these points, it's really, you know, mind-boggling. And then, you know, it just seems, Justin and Brandon, it feels like at times that our team is just a little bit out of condition. And you can see them when they just blow by our players. And, you know, that's not the problem I have. The problem I have is we're so locked in with the owings of the money and the commitment to these players, and they're just not producing, like you said. And unfortunately, you know, every game's a huge game, and we got to get our young guys in more. You know, it's nice they were in the fourth quarter, but clearly our guys are gassed. Clearly we need to see that young tap in the step from the bench. Like you said, Brandon, 10 points in Madison Square Garden is amazing. But we might need to do that new mix of getting everyone involved just to keep the boat afloat, like you said, because we're not playing any playoff teams forward. And with being at home, we really need to get control of our future and drive that momentum back to Bucks basketball that we know.
I do have two areas for optimism, I suppose. So the first one, are you going to be there on Sunday, Will?
I will be there. I'm going to be so excited after seeing how Brooklyn took Celtics to overtime. I'm expecting that type of effort and intensity. I'm expecting like a Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Final on Sunday. I want blood, you know. Let's go get it.
So that is piece number one, is the Celtics didn't lose. So you're not facing a Celtics team that's coming to Milwaukee on a two-game losing streak, because if that were the case, mathematically, I would not like the Bucks' chances. So there's that piece. The other one is, and again, like, this comes down to you. We can point to all these numbers and say, well, there's this and there's that. But like, you have to turn this around. Like, I used the phrase a couple of shows ago, and we thought we made some progress and we were there. But you have to be an active participant in your own rescue. Depending on what you look at in terms of there's a couple of sites that track this, but depending on what you go with, the Bucks have played anywhere from like the fourth to eighth most difficult schedule so far, and they have anywhere from the third to eighth most easiest remaining schedule the rest of the way. So that is the other piece of optimism, but again, you have to win those games. Like, it's one thing to say, hey, you got an easy schedule in front of us. We've already pointed to three teams, and I know As Will just pointed out, we talked about in the postgame, the Nets took the Celtics to overtime. The Nets have hovered close to 500. Same for the Bulls. We expect the Memphis Grizzlies to be much better this season, even though that was the walking wounded version of them you played. You still lost those games. So you need to start winning these games. And from there, you have to start beating good teams as well. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight. You know, the other thing that I didn't think I was ready for. It's like, Brandon, you're a father. It's like, you're not here yet, but when you have kids and they start to grow up and you're like, man, can't believe they're already in high school. Time flies so fast.
I had a kid in high school.
Well, graduated high school. Man, it was just yesterday that I saw this. I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready to see one of the sites that I go to quite a bit, Tankathon, that projects strength of schedule, a lot of things. They track who are your most difficult opponents remaining, who are your easiest opponents remaining. I was not ready to see the Milwaukee Bucks listed in the easiest opponents remaining column for all of these teams.
It's tough to see.
That's where we are.
I agree with you.
The Bucks and the Sixers, by the way, are both listed in easiest schedule or easiest opponents remaining on the schedule.
To go back to Will.i.am's comments real quick, Justin, just to touch back on those, I thought it was a fantastic call for him and drive safe on those back roads. When he talks about guys getting blown by, there's a reason Andre Jackson Jr. Was inserted in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on Gary Trent Jr. He's dealing with something, and back spasms, if you ever had them, are awful, and they never kind of go away. So that might be something to kind of keep your eye on throughout the course of the year. But there is a reason Andre Jackson Jr.
And not to cut you off, I forget, I can't recall what who had the number, who had the stat, but because like any coach will tell you this too, and I think Doc actually just said it the other day. But I've talked to a few people about this, Seth Partnow. Formerly of the Bucks front office and the Athletic, I've talked to him about it in the past. Of like, where do you even look when it comes to individual defensive metrics? And I mean, for the most part, the answer I've gotten from everyone that's been in sports analytics and front offices is we don't. Like, there is no great number to throw out there. Like, I'm not turning this on you specifically, but like plus minus and individual defensive rating, because you can track that on NBA.com. Like, you'll see people will look at that and say, oh, he has a defensive rating of this. And it depends on who's on the floor with you, number one, or even it's wonky when you look at when they defend, of like closest defender. Well, that doesn't really speak to was that your assignment. So it can get cloudy, and I've just been told frequently, don't pay attention to any of that. Like, we don't look at it. We track things in other ways. Can I see that? No, it's internal and it's proprietary.
That's what we have to look at.
Right. It's internal and proprietary. No, you can't see it. Like, okay. But there was one that was a brand new. It was somebody that just ad hoc'd this and I think just dug into synergy and looking at clips of defensive possessions and tracked, okay, this is a one-on-one in his assignment. Andre Jackson Jr. had the seventh best on-ball defensive performance so far. Very early in the season and not a huge sample size, but Andre Jackson Jr. was in some elite company, like the likes of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Alex Caruso, those types of players. I think Anthony Davis was on there as well. And there was Ajax. So, again, you'd love to see a larger sample size, but to back up your point, that's why he's out there. It's not that everybody else is failing miserably. It's, well, this guy's been very, very good at it, that quite frankly, even if there are some offensive questions, and like, I mean, it may be muted just because nobody else is really finding their stroke and nobody else is been able to find their offense, save for Giannis and Dame, that it hasn't been as much of an emphasis of, okay, well, maybe Andre struggled. And frankly, he's been fine offensively. But you may have those questions. It's just kind of reached the point of, okay, we just can't afford to not have this type of defense on the floor.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to the personnel, too. I mean, it's a different – I mean, the personnel that you're seeing right now out on the floor, the Brook Lopez, the Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, I mean, they're great players in their own rights, but, I mean, they're at that point in their career where, you know, this is a different set of guys than it was 3 years ago when they won that championship. And as fans, and it's easy to kind of look back on that 21 team and be like, this isn't the Bobby we know, this isn't the Brook or the Pat that we know. Father Time is undefeated, and eventually it's going to come to a point where they're going to get beat more times than we're used to seeing, and that's something that we're going to have to accept or you know, figure out going forward. And that's why, you know, I've urged for the younger guys to play, not take those minutes away from Brook Lopez or Bobby or Pat at all times, but in moments. And Tyler Smith showed tonight 10 points, 2 blocks, 2 rebounds in 8 minutes. I mean, 8 minutes a game. I do feel like there's moments in a game where he can get an 8-minute run. I do, especially if you're going to go small. Why not? At this point, why not?
I mean, 8 minutes of garbage time. That's the caveat that you have to throw out there.
It is. But let me ask you this, though. Because you mentioned last night AJ Johnson learning how to play in the G League. I mean, this is the NBA. Is this not better than getting run in the G League right now? I mean, the guys that he's going up against in garbage time now.
The thing is, it's what are your expectations for the season?
I totally agree.
Because, like,
I completely agree.
If this was the 2016 Bucks, yeah, you're playing both of them. You know, like,
yeah, go for it. Yeah.
If you want guys to learn, you're not expecting. And look, I mean, it's tough to even use this verbiage when you sit here at 2-7, but you're not expecting to compete for a championship. If it's, we want this guy to grow and learn, it's, we're starting a new phase of Bucks basketball. Now, I don't think we're there yet, but maybe you reach the point where, kind of what we said earlier, you just kind of, to a lesser extent of what we had discussed with Ajax, that you just kind of reach the point of, well, let's see, you know, like maybe it's just not working with these other guys and we got to see what we got here. But I don't think we're there yet, even with a 2-7 record. You know, I suppose it's the part of the good here is, all right, I mean, you're playing pretty poorly. When we went through the shooting percentages and everything else individually, hasn't been great. Would you rather that come versus inferior opponents or a tougher schedule? I mean, there's a chance you could win those games. And if you had an easier schedule, even with some of the offensive issues that you've had and defensive, I don't want to say the Bucks are losing just because they're not hitting shots. You know, maybe you'd have through these first 10 games instead of 3-7 or potentially 2-8, maybe you're 7-3, 6-4. Or better. But I do think that's part of what we saw last year with the 30-13 start, that, you know, there was some fool's gold in there, that things were not working properly, and you just had a very, very easy schedule to start the season. 855-616-1620. The number to join us tonight is the Bucks fall to 2-7 on the season. A 22-point loss at Madison Square Garden to the New York Knicks. More after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk.
All right, so there are 73 games remaining, as it has been pointed out by a few people. Where do you go from here? So I guess first and foremost, we wait to see Gary Trent Jr.'s availability for Sunday against the Celtics. And Brandon, as you mentioned, that is something that can linger. Andre Jackson Jr. as well with a hip pointer, what his status and availability is. I mean, we haven't even brought up the, hey, I wonder what Chris Middleton's availability is, because that's just kind of a, at this point, you just assume, you move forward with the assumption we don't have Chris Middleton. And when he's back, great. But Doc had the question asked to him, I believe it was before the Jazz game. I want to actually pull that up and see.
There was a report, too, that he progressed today. He completed 3-on-3.
Yeah, I know he was going to work on some 3-on-3. Yeah,
so that's, if you're looking for something encouraging, there it is. Even if he comes back on a minute restriction.
I would assume he's going to. He did last year. But, yeah, he was asked, and I think this is kind of, the approach that Bucks fans have to have as well. Before that Jazz game, he was asked, where does he and the team miss Chris Middleton the most? Where is his absence felt the most significantly? And Doc said, I don't think about it that much, to be honest. I'm being honest, because he's not playing. There's no reason for me to waste a lot of time thinking about things we don't have. I had him in the playoffs, but outside of that, I haven't coached him much at all. I know he can play. I know how good he is. But right now, I can't even focus on that because, for the most part, I haven't coached a team with Chris Middleton. I had 6 games in the playoffs, and in this part, I'm freelancing. But you had six games in the playoffs. That was pretty close to it, So
I mean, he looked good in those playoffs.
He did. He did. But that's the thing is, we keep saying, and I've been one to push back on all the, Chris is injury prone and this and that. But at some point, you do have to circle the games played portion. And I still have a hard time calling him injury prone, because a lot of this is bad luck. he slips on a wet spot. If I had a time machine, if there was one thing you could do going back in time, either go back to that game, game one against the Miami Heat, and make sure Kevin Love doesn't undercut Giannis, or just steer Chris Middleton away from the baseline in game two against the Chicago Bulls so he doesn't slip on that wet spot, and who knows where things go from there. But when you use injury prone, I think the connotation is oftentimes lazy. He doesn't work hard, so that's why he's picking up these injuries. He's out of shape and X, Y, and Z. And that's it's not the case with Chris Middleton. He has run into bad luck. But, at some point it is what it is. And, if he has reached the point where, I don't even want to use the word part-time player, but if, the Sixers, I think it's a very real conversation. Hey, is it just 45 to 50 games that we expect Joel Embiid to play every single season? It certainly feels like that's where we're headed with Chris Middleton. And I've made the case, the big difference, because, you and I talked about this too, the games played for Chris, Paul George, and Joel Embiid, nearly identical the last 4 seasons. It's not the company you want to be in when you hear Joel Embiid in games played. But the difference is Chris Middleton's your third option. Joel Embiid is the straw that stirs that drink for the 76ers. But, as we've seen, the identity, the conversation we had there over what is it with this team, do they need to just win games by outscoring their opponent? Well, that's what makes Chris Middleton more important, and that's where it gets tougher and tougher to wait. I've heard nothing additional outside of a few things that Doc has hinted at, and I've tried to get more information. Everything that I've gotten, nothing has led you down a negative path and led me to be very pessimistic about this, which makes it even more perplexing. I just go back to my the interview that Chris Middleton gave to Eric Name before the season started, where he was asked, what is a successful season for you? How would you define that? And he referenced 70 games, playing in that amount of games. And in fairness to Chris, he was on pace for, 68 games last year before he came down in Kevin Durant's foot. But he said, yeah, successful season is playing a lot of games and playing in close to that many games. I'm not placing blame on Chris or the organization or anyone, but you cannot convince me that this was what everyone expected, because if you're Chris Middleton, you don't give that answer if you know I'm not going to be ready for 3 weeks, possibly a month, to start the season. So I don't know what's going on, but you have to just assume you're a team without Chris Middleton until he's back on the floor. Like, that is your path out of this. It's not just we're waiting on Chris to come save us, because you don't know, number one, when that's going to be. And secondly, it places a lot of unfair pressure on Chris Middleton to, hey, man, the house is on fire. Please come put this out and pull all the kids and the animals out of the house.
Which is the frustrating part about all of this too, Justin, because you're right. You're absolutely right. And you got Giannis and Dame. And I think that if at the beginning of the year or even before this trade, if you had those two on the court together, I would automatically assume one of the better teams, not only in the Eastern Conference, but in the entire league. And I think that's what's the biggest frustration with all of this. And obviously there's more to it than just two players on a team, and you need guys to step up and produce, and we're just not getting that right now. And that's what I think tonight was the big frustration, is because it felt like in that Utah game on what is today, Friday, Thursday night, that it, hey, man, I mean, A.J. Green played well. Andre Jackson Jr. played well. Bobby Portis had 21 and 18. I mean, that was, you know, I mean, you want him to shoot a little bit better, but still 21 points in 18 minutes. Like, and now you're going out to New York and you got a nice little test. And outside of sticking it within seven in that first quarter, it was never close. I mean, it was a wire-to-wire loss. But, yeah. I mean, you got blown out by 12 points in that second quarter, and it just looked like that was it. Like, once this team gets down into double digits, and I know they've come back. That Cavalier game, they came back. I think they were down at 19 at one point as well.
Yeah, but it feels cap it to what you're getting at, I would assume, yeah. I mean, there is one other interesting part about all of this, and I do want to touch on that coming up after this, but 2-7, not where any of us expected to be. These are not the conversations we expected to be having. It still is early in the season. It's very early in the season, but you can only say that for so long. Like the old phrase of, it's getting pretty late, pretty early. Like, you are starting to walk down that block if these continue to mount. More after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk.
So, I think the cruelest part of all of this, Brandon, is two things. I mean, number one, to a lesser extent, the show that we had after opening night in Philly, where like it was,
yeah, man.
See, I told you everything that we asked for. Like, these guys are upgrades. Everybody was productive. There was ball movement. The defense was good enough. I know there was no Joel Embiid or Paul George, but the optics were everything you were looking for in that game. Like, that's part one. And the other part is, all offseason, a lot of the chatter was Giannis and Dame. Like, it did not work last season. It wasn't optimized. It wasn't what you expected when that trade was made. And that was a heavy emphasis. And Doc Rivers talked about it. Everybody talked about it. You know, like, and think back to Media Day, how much was made over the revelation that Dame and Giannis didn't get together in the offseason and work out together. I mean, I know I said it doesn't matter. You know, like, Giannis doesn't work out with Chris in the offseason, and they have as good a chemistry as anyone in the league. Their performance so far this season, you wouldn't know that there was no workouts together in the offseason. Like, these two guys, this has been, I mean, I hesitate to say the best pairing in the NBA because you're 2-7, but statistically, it has. They're the leading scoring duo, or at least they were coming into play tonight. It's been very good together. So that alone right there, like, kind of in the macro, like we said, hey, if I told you this is the stat line for Jalen Brunson tonight, you'd think, okay, Bucks won. Man, they're 3-6. The Knicks are 3-5. Let's go. It wasn't the case. And the same thing, if I told you Giannis and Dame, it's going to work. They're going to have three times already this season where they both scored 30 points. They're 1-2 in those games. And nights like tonight where, I mean, Dame, it was the first time since, I think, 2020 that Dame didn't attempt a three-pointer in the first half. He airballed two threes in this game. Like, this was the, all right.
Characteristic.
Yeah, like, this wasn't a great performance. But, you know, overall, he still scored. And I think one of the more encouraging things is, you know, last year, spotty's the wrong way to put it, but there was more of, and look, there was a lot that was going on off the court too that he was dealing with, that he is well documented several times throughout the offseason. But last year there was, all right, Dame looks like he's turning the corner. And then he'd kind of go through some slumps or just didn't appear to be himself. That I know a lot of people joke like, well, he's only got like one or two games a week that you can really count on him. He hasn't been that guy so far this year. He's been really good. And I think the most encouraging part is not even the shooting. It's that he's able to turn the corner and finish at the rim this year. Like, that is, the older you get, and especially for a smaller player, that's a big question is, well, does that start to deteriorate and all he can do is shoot? That hasn't been the case this year. Giannis has been pretty good. Those two guys have been really good together. We talked about the screens. I mean, tonight, I don't even know what to make about tonight, but those last two or three games, I do think that's really improved. Setting screens with a purpose for Giannis. So you've gotten everything you hoped for, but everything else around them has just not worked, save for that game in Philadelphia. Like, that was the one game and the second half, I suppose, yesterday against the Jazz. Those are the two instances where everything has fallen into place. Other than that, it's been Giannis and Dame are good. Nothing else around them has worked.
And that's, I think you would agree with me, that's their identity, and as it should be, right?
Well, a two-man team?
Yeah. Outside of, yes, I mean, not necessarily. You want other guys on the court, but yeah, as far as when you're looking at an identity, like, I know Doc has talked about it. You and I have talked about it. Like, that needs to be the identity, and they have gotten so much better. And I think you make a great point, Justin, when you talk about the offseason thing, because that's always like the big conversation. Giannis has also said he doesn't like working out with other players, and not necessarily just other players on his team, like anybody. Multiple players have approached Giannis to work out with him, and he has yet to take him up on it. So I don't buy anything to that either. I'm completely fine with them not necessarily getting together. I think you saw what a full offseason is for Damian Lillard, and he actually talked about it last night. You brought up turning the corner and finishing at the rim. He actually talked about, you know, what makes him have the ability to do that, and I thought he gave a really good answer into that.
Working out with David Goggins.
Getting on that bike and boxing that bag, but... I know the sky feels like it's falling, and I know 2-7 looks daunting, and you got the Celtics on the schedule. I do think that they're going to beat the Celtics on Sunday. I don't think, and it's a lot coming from me, I don't think panic really needs to get set in. And I know Doc said nobody's panicking and they're not worried about making the playoffs, which I don't know why. Did somebody ask him that question? Is that why he brought it up?
Well, yeah, because only 12 teams have made the playoffs in league history after a 1-6 start.
Yeah, we discussed it that night. But, I mean, this is the team you're going to ride with, though, Justin, right? Like, you're not making any moves. Like, even if you...
You're not making any substantial moves.
It's
to head in the opposite direction.
And I'm okay right now with that because all these guys that we mentioned before are just underperforming. And I know you don't have the patience, especially how the last few years have ended for this Milwaukee Bucks team when you had championship aspirations. But, I mean, it's as simple as hitting shots. It's as simple as getting the rebound. And Taurean Prince will explain exactly how to do that. But it's the basics right now for the Bucks that are just killing them. it's a make or miss league. You hear coaches and broadcasters and whatnot talk about it all the time. For the Bucks, it just hasn't been the case. And it's as simple as that. And I think the tide is going to get turned. And you mentioned the schedule. The schedule is going to ease up a little bit. But I think if I'm the Bucks, and I don't know if we're necessarily in the moment of the show to talk about the Celtics, but I think if you're Milwaukee, Justin, like, you got to treat Sunday. I think it was Q or Will I Am mentioned it. Like, it is game seven of the finals or the Eastern Conference Finals on Sunday. That's a big moment, yeah, in your schedule already. It's only going to be November 10th, I believe, that is Sunday. But, like, if you send a statement not only to the Celtics, and I wouldn't say statement, but if you win, you're telling yourself a lot of things. And we saw it in that Jazz game, and that's what was frustrating about tonight, because we thought, like, man, that it, once this team gets one, once they see something go right for them, things will start to click. The pressure will kind of release a little bit, and now you're dealing with a hip pointer for Andre Jackson Jr. and back spasms for Gary Trent Jr. So you don't know if you're going to even see those two on Sunday. But I think a win on Sunday does a lot of good in a lot of different ways, but I think this team no moves are going to be made. I don't think any moves should be made. I would like to see little things happen with the younger players on this roster and obviously in Oshkosh. You and I had that discussion last night. But that's really about it, though. I mean, this is your team. This is the team that was built for 2024, 2025, and you're either going to sink or you're going to swim. Right now they're obviously heading to the bottom of the ocean, but there's a moment where they can get that raft and get back up to the top of the surface of the water, and nothing that you can do outside of this team is going to change that.
Yeah, it's still not panic, but there is increased urgency. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because again, I'm just going to keep saying it. We cannot keep having the "it's still early" conversations. You know, like, it's the definition of insanity if that's what we continue to do here. So it's just 9 games. It is prior to tonight, it was 10% of your season.
If you're an NFL fan.
I was just going to say, it's the equivalent of, like, what, 6-7 bad quarters for the Packers in a season. So, like, the first game and a half, the first game and first half of game number 2, season's over. You know, like, I know. Well,
some people would go down that road, but you're right.
Now, over, no, but, like, does it change the discussion over, well, what is the ceiling of this team and what is the expectations? Maybe it does, you know? But I still, maybe it's naive, but I still believe, look, just figure it out. Start to hit shots. Guys are going to look like themselves. You do have to work on some things defensively. It's not just Andre Jackson Jr. as the, we need you to solve everything, kid. But you do have to fix some other things there. But figure this out. Have a seat at the table. Get into the playoffs. Avoid the 7th seed, but get there. Like, at this point, I do think we have to have realistic expectations of, like, what if it's a 6th seed? What if it's 5th seed? Maybe it is the play-in tournament. But, like, get there. Get there healthy. Because, I mean, I know we just said what the definition of insanity is if we keep saying, hey, it's still early. But, like, I choose to believe if this team can get to a spot where you're in the playoffs and you have a healthy Giannis, Damian Lillard, and Chris Middleton, I want to see what that looks like at the highest level of competition. We haven't gotten to see that. You know, obviously just 1 year with Dame, but we haven't gotten to see this team healthy in the playoffs for over 3 seasons now since they won the championship. That's the tough part. But it is not panic.
They weren't even healthy when they won the championship.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is not panic, but it is certainly increased urgency that you have to start to climb out of this hole. Now, again, it's almost like when you have no guardrails, that can be the other dangerous part is, you know, we keep citing, other than the Cavs and Celtics, no one in the East has been really good this year. Like, there's 3 teams that are 500 or better. The Cavs and Celtics are combined 18-2, and then you have the 4-4 Knicks. Other than that, everybody's 4-5, 4-6, 3-5. So even when I say, well, maybe it's 6 seed, I mean, everybody is keeping you afloat in the conference right now, which makes it even more frustrating. Guys, just start to hit shots. Start to win some of these games. But there are some little things and some trends that have been very disturbing on the defensive end that, you know, it'll disappear and then it rears its ugly head once more. So, like, those are the things. Consistency. We talked about it a couple of times now. Consistency after the Philly game. Great. Beat the Bulls. Start to piece together wins here. Because they haven't done that. Last year they did not do that. That's what you have to start to see. And it did feel like we were on that path. Mm-hmm. You know, you had 3 good quarters against the Celtics, a forgettable game against the Memphis Grizzlies. And then you lost those 2 games to the Cavs by a total of 3 points. It did feel like that game at home was the, all right, they're starting to dig out of something now. You lose on a Donovan Mitchell jumper. It fell down by 19. I mean, that's the thing that we don't mention when we say they lost 2 games to the Cavs by a total of 3 points. Sure, but you didn't look really good in the second one until you went on that charge late. You beat the Jazz. I know a few people pointed out tonight as fool's gold. Jazz are a bad team. They are by record. They're also the type of team that gives the Bucks difficulty. And I don't think it was all fool's gold. I do think there were some things to take away there. Obviously, the play that you had from Ajax, Giannis and Dame were very good together as well. They had, what, 75 points together?
You beat them by 23 points, though.
You beat them by 23, but...
Fool's gold, sure, but you dominated them.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't solely fool's gold. Like, fool's gold, right, to me is... I don't want to keep harping on it, but last year, when you were 30-13, but you were struggling to beat the Pistons, you were going to overtime with the Pistons, like those types of games. I'm like, man, why are the Bucks? It's just a close game with the Hornets, like stuff like that. That's fool's gold. Now, looking at the result of that game and say they figured it out, here we go. Like, sure, that you can say, well, that's fool's gold to make that assumption. But in terms of what worked and how they played, no. But now it's reached the point where we just got to see consistency here. One other thing that was brought up, and we'll start to wrap up the show, but one other thing that was brought up of, like, Chris Middleton isn't going to fix this. And we said he's not the savior. I don't agree that Chris Middleton isn't going to fix anything, because I think that's been brought up by a few people. He's going to fix a lot, but the question that remains to be seen is that enough for this team? Because it is on the offensive end that fix is going to come. But I'm still very curious. It you just get the sense, everything that Doc Rivers has said and kind of tiptoed around, of this team is going to play different when Chris Middleton is back on the floor. Like, I don't know if that means Chris is going to be exclusively like a small ball four. You're going to use him in spots in smaller lineups. But you get the sense he has said himself, there are lineups and ways I want to play that we just can't do because Chris isn't back. So I don't think it's accurate to say Chris Middleton isn't going to fix anything. He is going to fix some things for this team, but we don't have the answer as to whether or not that is going to be enough to push this team in the right direction from this 2-7 start. We will wrap up the show, take a look at what's up next, game number 10 against the Boston Celtics. So for the Bucks, 4 of your first 10 games of the season come against 2 teams that are combined 18-2 out of the gates. Jeez. We'll wrap up the show and preview that matchup after this on Bucks Talk. All right, Sunday afternoon, the Bucks and the Boston Celtics. Second time this season that you've played the Boston Celtics. Celtics are 8-2, Cavs are 10-0, and those have been 4 of your 10 games to start the season. It's been tough at 2-7 here, but again, there's been a couple of points of frustration. Opening nights, the fact that Giannis and Dame have worked, you just, you know, again, I don't want to keep harping on it, but when you look at some of these shooting numbers for the Bucks, as we just went through, Bobby Portis not off to the start that he envisioned, 26% on threes. Brooke Lopez, 26% on threes. Torian Prince and A.J. Green have both been really good. Dame, 37% on threes. Gary Trent Jr., just 23%. Pat Connaughton, 25%. You know, on and on and on. You haven't gotten those. I think the unanswered questions are two straight games we haven't seen DeLon Wright. And I don't think it was brought to Doc Rivers on the postgame tonight, just skimming through some of his comments. That's certainly a question I asked around, and I hadn't heard anything. So I know Doc had mentioned previously he wasn't, I don't want to say hurt, because if he's hurt, you got to put him on the injury report, and he hadn't been on there. But Doc had kind of mentioned he was on a bit of a minutes restriction. So I don't know what's going on there. And again, these are DMPs, because he has not been on the injury report either of the last two games that he's not played in. I did not have that on my bingo card. There's a number of things, Brandon, that I didn't have the bingo card to start this season. Yeah. 2-7, obviously the biggest of those. Gary Trent Jr. start, I didn't have there. But we can't keep saying it's early. You know, it is early. I mean, it's really early until you're 35 games into the season. But that only becomes an excuse for so long. You have to start to rescue yourself from this. It's going to be interesting to monitor the injury report tomorrow. I think it's around 2:30 that the Bucks, or 5 o'clock, I believe. 5 o'clock Central Time is when the Bucks will have to submit their injury report for the game on Sunday. So you're going to need Gary Trent Jr. You're going to need Andre Jackson Jr. to beat this team, the Boston Celtics. I don't know, did Jaylen Brown play in that game tonight? I know he's missed the last two.
I'll find out for you. Give me a second.
But the status of Jaylen Brown is going to be, and no, he did not. So you kind of get the sense we may not see Jaylen Brown on Sunday, which would certainly be a welcome
take any break win you can get at this
for
point.
The Bucks. Right. We'll take that. We'll take, if you want to rest Drew Holiday, if you want to rest your whole team, we'll take that, because at this point we just need to win and start to win more and more games. Look, maybe the excitement of the NBA Cup will bring out some of that competition too, because once you wrap up that game.
It was more anticipated than I thought it was going to be last year.
So you wrap up that game, you got the NBA Cup tipping off Tuesday at home against the Raptors. And as we've pointed to a couple of times, the schedule does start to swing in favor of the Bucks, not only by the level of the opponents in terms of their win percentage that are on that schedule, but the number of home games that you have as well. Next week alone, Raptors on Tuesday, Pistons on Wednesday, a home and home back to back. I would love, if we are talking about a 3-game win streak, I would love nothing more than talking about a 3-game win streak going into a Saturday afternoon game 1 week from tomorrow against the Charlotte Hornets. Like, that's what's directly in front of you. If you can take care of business, and I know that's a big if, against the Boston Celtics. Raptors, Pistons, Hornets, your next 3 games. But as we've seen through these first 9, you can't take anything as a given and take any opponent for granted. You got another game with the Bulls just before the week before Thanksgiving, the highly anticipated first matchup with the Indiana Pacers. 2 games with the Hornets this month alone. Hornets have been off to a nice start, though, this season. So once you get past the Celtics game, they're very winnable games. But we've seen the Bucks struggle with those types of opponents so far this season. But Sunday afternoon is when it gets going, the Bucks and the Boston Celtics. 2:30 tip time, 2 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. Brandon and I will talk to you Sunday.